Welcome to episode 15 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Mark.
And on today's episode of the show, we're going to be reviewing erotic drama 50 Shades of Grey. Yes, we have actually been to see this, haven't we, fellas?
It was beautiful.
It was the worst thing I've ever seen, but I'll save that for reviewers.
Spoiler alert, Jesus. We're also going to be discussing the worst films ever made that are based on video games, and there are many, many to choose from. We've got some prizes that we're going to look to give away later on as well, and we're going to discuss how the Oscars went. And we're also going to be rewatching Predator to sort of counterbalance the womanliness of 50 Shades of Grey. So, let's get started. The topic that I chose for the top three this time round isn't actually a top three. We're going to do a bottom three, as it were. I wanted you guys to come to this recording and tell me the worst three films that you can think of that are based on video games. So, I'm going to start with Adam.
Okay. Well, those of you that have read the bios on our skiptotheend.co.uk will realise that I actually state in there that I just believe video games should not be made into films. It is a point-blank rule of mine. They generally never work. You do have the odd occasion where there may be success from it, but generally it's a no. Now, my third choice, maybe a bit of a contentious point, but Street Fighter.
Wow.
How would that be contentious in any
way? Some people treat it as a guilty pleasure film. Some people enjoy it.
Yeah, but that still suggests that it's shit. They just like it nonetheless.
It is single-handedly one of the worst films I've ever seen. You have the all-American Guile, played by Jean-Claude Van Damme, with a fantastic, Belgian accent.
Yeah, he's the muscles from Brussels. The all-American Guile is the muscles from Brussels.
The origin story of Blanka was the worst thing I've ever seen. It was basically Guile's friend, who was genetically transformed by M. Bison's scientist. I think it was actually Dr. Dalsim as well. Yeah. So they changed Dalsim from a yoga master to a doctor. Zangief is this hideous buffoon. Cammy, who is from the UK, is played by Kylie Minogue, which sums up what Americans think a British accent is, I guess. But it's dreadful. It is one of the worst things I've ever seen.
It's one of the worst pieces of shit that's ever been made. It's not in my list, actually. Didn't make the cut, but I have seen it recently. I rewatched it on Netflix not so long ago, and it's garbage. It's utter garbage, isn't it?
Oh, it's awful. I think Ken and Ryu are underground hustlers.
Yeah,
if I remember correctly as well. They're actually just going to underground fighting rings and earning money and things like that. It's awful.
Yeah, Kylie's fit in it though.
Yeah, sure.
If you're looking for the silver lining,
her arse is brilliant.
That's degrading.
Degrading.
There you go.
Shame.
So that's my input to this conversation so far. It's absolutely dreadful. I remember renting it on video at the time from Blockbuster Video. Remember those guys before Netflix screwed them out? Basically, it's absolutely terrible. I want it to be good. I used to love Street Fighter. I was always more of the Street Fighter than the Mortal Kombat. I was obsessed with it. I used to love it on the SNES. But no, the film was absolutely dreadful.
Well, about 6 years ago, I actually got the box set of the Street Fighter anime movies they did. And I watched them all back to back. And after that, this film was just 20, 30, 40 times worse because the Japanese anime proved you can do a good Street Fighter film.
I still haven't seen the anime. Mark, I think it was in your... Was it in your top animated films list we did a while back?
Yeah, I might have to refresh that. So maybe if I go back to that episode, check out skiptotheend.co.uk, look on there and have a listen. But no, yeah, it was a really, really good soundtrack to that movie as well.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Go on then, Mark. What was your first pick?
Super Mario Brothers the movie.
Yeah.
Bob Hoskins as Mario, dreadful, terrible story. Shouldn't really ever have been made into a film.
No.
Shouldn't have to.
No, shouldn't. It's an absolutely terrible idea. Is.
It was the first one as well. It was the first game to be made into a film, I believe.
Wow, I didn't know that.
They started well.
No, it was appalling. Went to the cinema to see it.
Yeah.
Parents took me. Really excited. Mario, what a game. You know, Super Mario World, brilliant. Got to the cinema. I'm sorry, there's not one good thing I can take away from that film.
It's the epitome of start as you mean to go on. With video game movies, that's basically what they've done.
Yeah, they set a very low bar, and they've just been limboing under it since.
What? I'm never going to watch that film ever again, actually. Thinking about it right now, Even if one of you ever pick up as a rewatch, we are not ever going to experience that film again.
No. I mean, this was also one of my three picks as well.
Good.
Quite clearly. It's a garbage film. One of the things I loved, I was reading a bit about it yesterday, and initially the role of Mario was offered to Danny DeVito, Adam.
Yeah. Why did you turn it down?
Yeah, why did you turn it down? Would you have
this is the moment.
Fish to fry?
Come on.
Why do you think I did? Look at it.
Because you read the script.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Tom Hanks was offered the role.
You're joking.
Yeah, they actually offered him the role, but then they took the offer back because they decided that Bob Hoskins was a more profitable actor. So there you go.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
Absolutely shocking.
I remember reading, and I can't remember who played Luigi in the end?
John Leguizamo.
I remember he was interviewed, and he basically said it was the worst thing he's ever done. Mm-hmm. Him and Bob Hoskins both knew it was going to be terrible, and apparently to get through filming it, they both just went and got drunk.
Yeah.
After filming had ended.
Yeah.
Every night.
And it's a shame that you see someone like Dennis Hopper, an absolute legendary film actor, slumming it in a piece of garbage like this. And he too has said in interviews that it's one of the worst things he's ever done.
And I generally feel like when, at the time, Mario had obviously become quite big, and it was one of the big things at the time. I think they were doing a cartoon show as well.
Yeah.
So to be offered a role in the Super Mario Brothers film, you probably thought, wow. But I mean, this is actually my number two. So
at least we all give it the credit it deserves.
One. Yeah, yeah. I think it was fairly obvious that we were all going to pick that one.
So, I mean, that's it for me. I mean, that was dreadful.
Ben, what was your number three?
The same.
Oh, you went, that was your third choice. Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. Wow.
And it's amazing to me that we've all got it out of the way this early. It can only get better from here.
Well, as I said, it's my number two, so we've just spoken about it. So, Mark?
I'm going to go with Doom.
Okay.
I don't think you've seen this film, have you?
I've not seen it. I'm familiar with it.
I'm surprised. Yep. Doesn't it have Dwayne The Rock Johnson in it?
It does, yeah.
It's usually your kryptonite. You love a film with Dwayne The Rock Johnson in it.
Yeah. I think it's one of the few of his I haven't seen.
If you can carry on and make sure you don't see this one, you'll still have a lot of respect for him.
Yeah.
It is dreadful. They went for the whole trying to make it the first-person perspective, so they filmed as you did on Doom with the whole left, right, forward, yeah, going through tunnels. The sequences there, you think, oh, this could be quite good. Nah, it was not. It was dreadful.
I'd love to imagine the thought process of that. Right, okay, we're going to do it like the game. We're going to make it, you know, first-person perspective, because there's nothing people love more than watching other people play games. That's not incredibly tedious at all.
Nope.
Dreadful.
I remember I used to love going around my friend's house when he only had one controller.
Yeah, taking it in turns.
I'm playing single-player missions on everything.
GoldenEye, watching him play GoldenEye for hours.
Because the multiplayer first-person shooters were never fun.
No, absolutely horrendous.
I think Halo is one of the worst-selling games of all time, if I remember.
Yeah, no one bought it.
Yeah.
Did we ever get a movie? I've just got to ask this now. Did we ever get a movie for Duke Nukem?
No.
I think it's one of them that's been
that
like...
That needs to happen.
I think it's been in developmental hell for about 20 years.
I'd love to play that game. Yeah. You know, go to the toilet and push in all the fairness, space bar.
It took them about 20 years to release another Duke Nukem game.
And why did they? I played that on the PS3. Dreadful.
Really?
Absolutely dreadful. That old game was cool, though, in the day.
Yeah.
Go to the toilet, push the space bar, go and play pool, go up to the pool table, push space, hits the balls. Little things.
Was Duke Nukem the one with the Nazis, or was that the one of the other ones?
That was Wolfenstein.
That was Wolfenstein. That was the one I used to play the hell out of.
Wolfenstein's good.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're just talking about...
Yeah, we're just talking about games.
We need to, yeah.
Games cast.
Ben, number two.
My number two choice is DOA, Dead or Alive.
Oh, God.
Based off the fighting game series. It's a terrible, terrible film, and all it is an excuse to see young women in bikinis bouncing around, which, from what I can remember of the games, is all that the games were.
Pretty
so
much.
It's true to life. The one thing I will give credit to DOA for is it's the one film from a game where they at least tried to stay true to the game. So Street Fighter was a fighting competition, a fighting tournament. What was the film about? I don't know, some bullshit about the army. You know, whereas this, Dead or Alive, is actually about a fighting tournament. It's about all these people coming together on an island to be in a part of the fighting tournament. So I thought, well, at least they've tried. They've failed, but at least they tried, you know.
It's about taking part that matters, you know.
And it stars Jamie Presley, who was Earl's wife in My Name is Earl.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it also stars Holly Valance. Do you remember her?
I used to love her. Yeah. From Neighbours.
Yeah, everyone of our age group loved her.
Didn't she have a single?
She did.
I'd love to watch her. Come on, this is the 50 Shades episode. We can be a bit degrading.
No, we can't.
Yeah, we can.
We're better than that.
No, we're not.
Nah.
Yeah, you're right.
So, Dead or Alive, yeah. I'm guessing neither of you've seen it.
I tend to try and avoid video game movies as a rule.
Yeah.
Is it number one time already?
Yeah.
Let's just get this out of the way. Do it. Adam.
Okay, so I actually had a bit of a guilty pleasure for Resident Evil, the first film, Resident Evil. I thought, as far as things go, it's tried to stay at least slightly true to what, you know, the original things about. There was the Umbrella Mansion. There was, but it was still enough, I guess, distance from the game to be classed as its own thing, which I loved. I thought that was very cool. Then came, and this is the worst thing I've ever seen, Resident Evil Apocalypse.
I've seen that. Isn't that it bad? Is so bad.
This is this was based literally instead of kind of trying to make it at least their own thing, they just full on based it on Resident Evil 3.
Yeah.
Except they changed. They still had Jill Valentine in it, who was the main character from Resident Evil 3, but they also had the character from the first film played by Mila Jovovich.
Jovovich.
But instead of Jill beating the Nemesis monster, Alice does, who's played by Mila Jovovich. Now, the whole thing changes throughout the entire film. You find out that the guy from the first film is the Nemesis monster, which was never true. That's not part of the game. Basically, they changed the entire storyline of the game while trying to keep it exactly the same.
Can't have it both ways. Can't have your cake and eat it.
The worst thing about these films, they're still making them. It's like Extinction and Extinction 7, and there's literally about 15 of these titles. No, there was only one out a couple of years ago, Afterlife or something. I don't know.
The thing is, if people keep paying money to see them, which they are, they're going to keep making them.
We're going to find those people that pay this money, and we're going to kill them so we don't get any more of this trash released on us.
Me and Ben do not agree with the views of Mark on Skip's Theme Podcast, and if there are any murder investigations underway, myself and Ben are not part of them.
We have alibis. So is it my number one now?
No, it's Mark.
Oh, yeah.
You're just trying to cut me out now. There is so much trash out there, and I've basically had to... It's been really difficult all day to try and pick the number one, but I'm going to go with it. Hitman.
Oh, okay.
Haven't you seen it?
I have, actually.
I thought it was okay.
Yeah, I thought it was okay.
It's still crap. It's still dreadful, you know. I respect... What's the guy? Is it Timothy...
Timothy Oliphant.
I really like him. Yeah. In a lot of films, obviously in The Office and stuff, I really like that guy. I think that's what annoys me more. It might be not as bad as some of the other game films, but to see that he's given up... Like Max Payne when...
Mark Wahlberg.
Why do these big actors need to do these films? And he shouldn't have done that film.
They're making a sequel to Hitman at the minute. It's not him, it's some other fella.
At least he's learned his lesson. Yeah. But it is dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. I used to like the game, actually.
It's one of the better video game films out there, though.
No, it's dreadful. Watch it again.
It's not like a high...
Oh, no, it's not. Yeah. It's like saying it's one of the better wasting diseases.
Yeah. Or being, being the world's tallest dwarf.
Put that on the cover.
Man, it's like being the world's tallest dwarf.
Yeah, it's the nicest bit of turd in diarrhea. It's dreadful. I'm never going to watch it again. I hated it. It was crap. I think it's because I like the game. You still love it, man.
I was shit at that game.
Really?
Because you need to be stealth, don't you? I just like shooting people in the head.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Ben, number
in
one.
In the game.
In real life, but yeah.
Your topic, mate. You must have put the most thought into this. Let's hear it.
My number one is Street Fighter.
What are you going to say?
The Legend of Chun-Li.
Dreadful.
Oh, my God.
Have you seen
God.
It?
Is that the one with Lana Lang from Smallville?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Kristen Crook. It's the worst piece of casting. She is so miscast because she's such a little flimsy bent.
Am I
allowed to say that?
On the episode next week.
Yeah. And she is not Chun-Li because Chun-Li was a badass, man.
Yeah.
She is not Lana Lang. It's a terrible, stupid, annoying film.
She always had to go against Kylie, though, didn't she?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Who?
I'm talking about
the first one.
You mean Cammy?
Cammy, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, she was never going to be anywhere near as good as Kylie was in the first one.
Once you've had Kylie come along, you're never going to be able to match that performance.
Honestly, it's an absolute shit house of a film.
Oh, it's dreadful. I think I only got 20 minutes into it.
Yeah. Oh, you missed all the good bits then. Oh, it was absolute rubbish.
I saw the good bit. I turned it off.
And there's a bit in it where Bison... who is played by Neil McDonough, who also plays Dum Dum Dugan in the Marvel films. He plays Bison, and there's a bit where part of his backstory is that he like killed his pregnant wife and then used some sort of voodoo ceremony to put his essence into the unborn kid. It's like, I don't remember that in the game.
No, that's dreadful.
That's when you complete it, you get a secret little mission at the very end.
It's awful. That's dreadful.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, sequels are invariably worse than the first one, we know this, but the first Street Fighter film was so terrible. How could they possibly have made a film that was worse? But by God, they did.
Good on them.
Yeah,
they got mentioned today.
It's the first mention they've had in
well
about
done.
15 years.
Quick out of the blue question to you both. If they could make a good movie from one of your favourite video games right now, is there something you'd pick? Is there something you think would actually work?
Pong.
Yeah? 2.5 hour IMAX. 3D.
I'd probably say something like Destiny, just because it's an open world RPG. They're doing Warcraft at the minute, aren't they? World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
So anything where there's an open world RPG, there's not a set, I guess, storyline per se. There's just a world that people adventure through. You can generally create your own story from that.
Well, I'm a big fan of these Lego Star Wars games. I'm thinking they should make some films based on them. That'd be a great idea.
They have done a few like one-shot episodes of like Lego Marvel Superheroes Unite.
Have they?
And stuff like that, yeah.
I want to do a movie of Toe Jam and Earl. Just stoners walking around on that planet with the elevator. That'd be cool.
I think it's Planet Funk, was it? Funkatron?
Something like that.
That would be cool.
I'm sure I read somewhere that there is a film in production for Earthworm Jim.
That would be unreal.
Yeah.
I take it's going to be CGI.
I thought so, yeah.
But there is
Christian Bale as Jim.
I think there is The Last of Us and Assassin's Creed in production at the minute.
Yes, indeed. In fact, you've just written an article for the website about Assassin's Creed. People can check that out. Skip to the.co.uk.
Right then. So is it already time to find out next week's topic?
Yes, and it's you, isn't it, Mark?
It is. So, guys, not trying to plug the website too much, but I like to go on there and read the lists because, you know, I don't listen back all the time. And I was reading how we first started out. We talked about our top five comedies and stuff like that. And I couldn't believe that we haven't done it yet. So it was quite a simple one, but I thought, maybe I can guess your number ones already, but it would take a bit of time to think about your number twos and threes. So we're going to go back to the old days of doing five. Top five sci-fi movies.
Nice.
That's not easy.
No.
Not easy at all.
Love it, though. Love talking about sci-fi. I'm down with that.
So top five for next time. Top five sci-fis. I put a spell on you. Because you're mine. Well, believe it or not, it's now reality. It's time for our review of 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah, do you want to tell the people why it is that we're seeing this film, or why it is that we've been to see this film?
I'm going to take some credit and hope that a lot of people listen to this podcast, and we might get new listeners that have never listened because it's 50 Shades of Grey, which has broke records at the moment of the opening weekends in single day cinema history and stuff. So I'm hoping that the people out there that have not ever gone and delved into Skip to the End will go, oh, 50 Shades of Grey, I wouldn't mind hearing what these three gentlemen said lightly. Kind of think about this movie, but I thought it was a good idea.
Yeah,
I wanted to see something different, and I don't think as a podcast we can ignore the fact that this is one of the biggest films of the year. So I did say to you two, please come and see it. You completely said no. I don't mind. You refused. You said, I'm not going to be seen dead in the cinema.
Yep.
And I said, come on, you didn't come and see Tusk, which I was really big on wanting to see. You refused that as well.
Yeah, but you know we were right about that in the end.
Yep. So I kind of... I said, come on, let me have one film that both of you have to come to. And if there's anything that you two want to go and see in the future, I will say, okay, you guys supported me for 50 Shades. Like an override, you know, like a pass to get out, you know?
Yeah, it's your free pass. So we've decided that we get one each.
That's it.
And you've wasted yours.
And it's not one a year, it's one for your whole life.
Yeah.
So I've used mine.
Yeah. So Adam, use yours wisely, I will do the same.
Definitely. And Mark, I mean, I accept what you've just said, but no.
Let's just say now, and I'll say it this moment of the podcast, and I won't say it again. Please, if you're listening to this, ask all your friends, family, anyone you know to listen, because I want this to be the most downloaded episode that we've done, just to have that bragging right of told you so. It will be good. So anyone you know, or if you've downloaded it, delete it, download it again, delete it, download it again. Just get these figures high, because I want this to be our most popular singular episode, just to have that right.
Or do not. We are not beggars here at Skip to the End.
Let's get into the film then. So I suppose building up to the cinema, us three went with one of our mates.
Yeah.
It was four lads. We got into the cinema. There was not, and this is not exaggeration, there was 60, 70 people in there.
Something like that.
It was quite popular. Sunday night. Got in there. I'd say there's probably... Yeah, there's probably two other men in there that have been dragged along with their wives or girlfriends.
Yeah, exactly.
But there was, it was Fanny Fest. It was.
Yeah.
It was pure, and we did get around the laughter as we walked in.
Oh, yeah.
Just because they couldn't believe it. And then I noticed Adam was a bit later coming in. I think he went to get a drink or something. So what did I do? Lads, we're come sit with us. Had to kind of, you know, just emphasise that we're there.
Yep.
I think we should talk about the build-up as well, the trailers and stuff. We had body form, tampons, we had different hair dyes, mascara adverts.
Oh, they knew their audience.
They targeted it well.
It was not us.
No, it was an experience. But we've done it.
Yeah.
We're here now. Let's talk about the film.
So, Mark, go on. What is the film?
Wow. We're not going there straight away.
No, just give us an overview of what is the film. Tell our listeners.
What's it about?
If they've not heard of 50 Shades of Grey before, what is this about?
It's about Christian Grey, who's a billionaire, very successful businessman, who is a very clean-cut, orientated businessman, who really looks the part, and he's a man's man, isn't he? He's what every girl would fantasize about. He's got power, he's got money, a bit like Bruce Wayne. That's who he reminds me of.
And he also has a secret cave of his own.
Yes. He hires a lady called... what's her name?
Anastasia Steele.
That's the one. To come and work for him. She's very nervous, very kind of innocent, I'd say. Quite sweet and innocent.
Uh-huh.
So much so she's a virgin.
No way.
Spoilers alert. She's very attracted to this man. You can see why. He's a gorgeous, good-looking guy. Good jawline.
Nothing to do with the billions in the bank as
no,
well.
No, nothing to do with that. No. But good-looking chap. Goes and works for him. Starts to fall for him. He's very strict on saying that he doesn't want a relationship. He lays down the foundations. He doesn't mess her around. He says, look, I'm only here for, you know, I don't want anything serious. Then it works out that basically she works in a hardware shop in the spare time. Gets a few pennies like that because she's, you know, only just graduated, obviously. He goes in to get some rope and some utensils that you'd think would be a mass murdering device, but no, it's for his sexual encounters that he gets up to in his pleasure room.
Yeah.
The story basically then turns into them two getting together. He likes to treat her well and takes her in this room to experiment and lead her into things that she may have not done before. And then we basically see how he changes, really, because he starts to fall in love with her a bit. A little bit.
Yeah.
Because he does, you know. And she gets whipped a lot. Doesn't like it. The end.
Yeah, that's it. She then gets in an elevator.
And goes.
The end.
The end.
That's what happens.
So that's skipped to the end analysis. No, let's talk about it, guys. Come on.
It's one of the worst films I've ever seen. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Oh, definitely.
How often were we laughing in that? Either laughing or cringing or getting just angry. Because it was one of the stupidest, most poorly written pieces of shit that I've ever had the misfortune to experience. And, you know, apparently so is the book. Yet they made a film of it because there are enough menopausal or women out there who bloody love this stuff.
I remember saying to Ben as we kind of came out of the cinema, there are plenty of great books that have been turned into terrible films. So if you take a terrible book, you're going to make a terrible film.
Yeah. You can't polish a turd, no matter how hard you try.
I mean, there were points in which the dialogue was just awful.
It made episode one look like an Oscar-winning performance movie. Like, I think it was the worst acting I've ever seen.
I'd say it was
a comedy.
I'd say I feel sorry for the person who had to adapt it to a screenplay, but they probably got paid a lot of money to do it.
Yeah. Kelly Marcel, her name, is the person who wrote the screenplay based on E.L. James's Christ awful novel. She will have been paid an absolute ton to pump out that tripe.
And that's probably the easiest work she's ever done.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Basically, all it is Anastasia Steele, Dakota Johnson's character, biting her lip, acting all coy, getting her ass whipped, saying the name Christian, end of film. That's the plot, that's the story, that's the script.
I wanna go into the film a bit more, just, you know, the real
is
kind of
more?
Bits that... So at the start, we see that she's fallen for him and she says that she's a virgin. And he does say quite... strictly, I will never share a bed with you. I won't sleep with you. I don't sleep with women. I'm all about just nailing them and that's it. Degradingly. And we then find out the first time that he ever spends the night with her, he sleeps there.
Yeah.
So he doesn't stick by that. But then he decides to use that later on. Like, you know, I've told you already I will not spend the night with you.
Yeah, even though he did it the first
night. I've just nailed you. Go to sleep. You know, I'm going to go back to my room. No.
Yeah. And she was like, oh, you know, you stayed the first time. And he was like, oh, yeah, I felt these things I hadn't felt before. You're changing me. I was like,
yeah, I did see Ben about four times in the cinema put his hands in his head and say, oh, and we had the women around us laughing in the cinema because you could just hear. Like, I think one of our friends was pointing out bits to you, like, did you not notice, Adam? She's kept the pencil that you first gave her, and now she's putting it in her mouth.
He literally went, oh my God, the pencil!
It's a symbol.
In the most sarcastic manner possible. I just think it's the most... Oh, a derived piece of turn I've ever seen.
Yeah, and you just mentioned there were several times during the film where you saw me put my head in my hands. There were several times during the film where I saw Adam just slap his thighs with fury. Just like, not again, no.
I think whenever someone comes out with a terrible line and it's followed up by another terrible line of dialogue, or an equally terrible, I get frustrated. I think there's one bit where he just literally says... I want to fuck you into next week. Yeah. And I just started clapping.
Well, the whole cinema laughed, didn't they? They were literally just laughing. It was...
We became those obnoxious people at the cinema that people hate.
Yeah.
But I can't honestly say that I feel I ruined this film for anyone.
How could you?
The only people that ruined this film for everyone were the people that made this film.
Yeah. And who is this for? Because I live in the world. I've met women. They're smarter than this. Why would they want this?
Women... are dirty, and there's dirty women out there that would have read the book, touched themselves, and wanted to reenact and see on the big screen what went through their head. I just really like the same.
I just don't like this 50 Shades of Grey thing. It's porn for people that don't like porn. It's sex for people that don't like sex.
Yes, but there's needs for people out there, and obviously they like to see it on the big screen. And, you know, it might hopefully... make some people out there try new things.
Are you going to try whips and chains and shit now?
You said no. I've asked you twice. I've asked you twice today, and you said no.
Yeah.
What? One thing I will say, now, let's be honest about it. We're lads. We have seen, probably, I'm not assuming, but I'm sure you may have seen naked people doing stuff before on the internet or on a DVD. I did expect to go into the cinema and actually be quite, whoa, that's pretty extreme. This is why people are boycotting the cinemas. I expected to see some maybe very naughty things happening in the bedroom involving, you know, maybe a bum or something, you know, that sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? That sort of thing. That's what I expected. And I was very surprised how kind of mild it was.
Yeah.
There was literally, this is a typical love movie where she lost her virginity and it was quite, the movie was, you know, real slow, passionate kissing, really soft and gentle. And it was like something that you'd see in bloody Bridget Jones. It was ridiculous. And then there was the scene where he then took her to this kind of sexual pleasure room, the playroom, I think he called it. And she wasn't that shocked. She was just looking around at all these different whips and stuff. But even when it came to using this stuff, I thought, my God, he's going to pull out butt plugs. He's going to do this. He's going to do that. Because, you know, she asked, didn't she, on the contract, what's a butt plug? And I thought, it's going to get filthy.
And also, I know she was a virgin and innocent in the ways of the world. The clue's kind of in the name, what a butt plug is. I think, like, you can figure that out.
So she's reading the contract and going through the, yes, I will do this, yes, I won't do that. And she didn't really reject that much stuff. You know, I think she said something about she won't be fisted or something like that.
She was not happy about the fisting.
No. But he went in the room, he put her in the handcuffs from the ceiling, suspended, and I thought, this is it now. He's going to literally do really stuff that we're going to be even like, wow, I can't believe it's only an 18, you know, and it's still made the cut. He whipped her on the bum with a horse whip about three or four times.
Yeah.
And then I think the next scene he got an ice cube and put it down her stomach and chest area, but there was nothing. That was it. It was not like, oh my God, I just saw him spaff all over, or there was
brilliant spaff.
Okay,
Christ, it's true. I thought it was going to be like the epitome of filth, but it was no dirtier than the films you used to get on Channel 5 of a Friday night back in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Started at 1 a.m.
That always starred Shannon Tweed.
I have seen more explicit things on a DVD cover.
Yeah, in Amsterdam with a dog.
It wasn't explicit at all. And this is one of the reasons why apparently the novelist E.L. James isn't happy with it. because the writer, Kelly Marcel, took all the main sex scenes out. There was some absolute filth in the book, by all accounts. So E.L. James is now saying that she wants to write the script for the inevitable sequel.
Well, it's supposed to be a famous scene, which I read about, where he removes her tampon.
Yeah.
And then he has sex with her. And that obviously wasn't in the film. But that would have still been enough to talk about and go, well, fair play, at least they kept that in. There was nothing. That was just a normal film that you've... I've seen 7-8 films that are just like that, which are 15s, and there's just a sex scene that's quite raunchy. That's yeah. it. I didn't see anything that shocked me. There wasn't anything in that room that you've not seen on any other sort of erotic film. It was dreadful.
You've got to the crux of it there. Not only is it a god-awful, poorly written, poorly staged, poorly directed, poorly acted piece of tripe, the one thing that it supposedly had going for it was the sexual content,
yeah.
and it watered it down. There wasn't even any of that.
Shock us, you know, show us something.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to jump straight to the end yet, but... The final scene, which is the cracking point, so Anna's there, she's on the bed, she's handcuffed, she's not had anything majorly done to her, and he says, I'm going to whip you, and he pulls out this quite big whip, and I'm going to ask you to count 1 to 6 as I whip you 6 times, and he hits her, whoopsh, and it's like 1, whoopsh, 2, and she can see that she's not enjoying it. But that was the real straw that broke the camel's back. That was, I can't believe you've done this.
Yeah.
You've whipped me on the bottom and made me count to 6. And it was as if he'd, like, asked her to bring in her sister and nan and have an orgy. But it was ridiculous. It was like, all you've done is whipped her 6 times on the bum, which she's had done before. And she was like, I'm never going to speak to you ever again. Left.
Yeah.
Horrific. Like he just pooed on her.
Yeah.
That's it, isn't it?
Exactly. Like he'd introduced a bit of scat to the event.
Is that what it's called?
You know, the arse whipping, like the straw that broke the camel's back, it was just a slightly more fierce arse whipping than the one prior to it.
Yep.
It wasn't enough for her to storm out in tears.
And we're reading now that apparently Jamie Dornan is not going to be signing on for the sequels.
I'd love that.
I think he's watched it back and gone, do you know what, I'm not doing any more of this.
I thought the same thing. I mean, the excuse he's giving is apparently his wife or missus or whatever it is didn't like him doing it. So she's asked him not to do the sequels. But really, I think he's just watched it and gone, this is going to do nothing for my career.
Yeah, it would amaze me, in fact, if they didn't... Because they know there are, I think, 3 books. It would amaze me if they hadn't already signed him up to a contract, locking him in for the rest. If he was smart enough to not get locked into that, then brilliant. Well done, Jamie.
Yeah. The scary factor of this film, which I've read about, is that actually Angelina Jolie was approached to direct this film and she turned it down. You can see why, but that's the sort of thing you imagine, you know, that would be the big debut directing film. You know, that would have been a big one, but obviously she went with a more worthy film like, was it Unforgiven? Unbroken.
No, that's an old Western.
Unbroken, so yeah, she did the Clint Eastwood film. But yeah, and I also read that all the cast had learnt the lines in 5 days, which was pretty obvious.
Yeah.
I honestly think that the script writer, Kelly Marcel, did you say?
Yeah.
Has literally just been told, right, here's the book, take the sex scenes out that's too graphic and knock it up into script. And then she's gone, right, that out, that out, that out. There we go, there's your script.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like you've said much on this review. I know you were angry, but...
It's the worst thing I've ever seen.
I will still say there's no analysis. Worse.
There's no depth. I can't sit there and go, the cinematography. No, it's all awful.
But what about the cliffhanger of her leaving in an elevator? Aren't you excited for the next one, no?
She's slightly been whipped on the arse with a whatever it is, a horse whip or some shit like that.
Wasn't it a belt? I think it might have been a belt.
Like, yeah, she's getting all uppity about it and all high and mighty. Like, I can't believe you've done that. Well, don't get involved with a bloke who's clearly some sort of domestic abuser then.
Yeah.
Any guy that you go back to their house... Not like us and us, but if you're going back and he says, I want you to read a contract about what I want you to do, that should be enough warning signs that he's not really in it for like a loving, romantic, let's snuggle up on the couch and watch a DVD and get some takeaway. He wants to whip you and do stuff to you that will make you not walk right for weeks.
Now,
do you know what I mean? It's true though, isn't it?
You're talking about the bum stuff again.
Yeah. Why didn't he bum her? That would have then been like, you've gone too far.
But, you know, you've sort of touched on a point there, Adam, which I think is worth bringing up. You know, this guy is clearly a sadist. He's a guy that likes hurting women. It's towards the end of the film when he actually physically hurts her that she has an issue. But this film, I think, is supposed to still present him as this sexy, desirable man.
Yep.
Who, as you've said, is an abuser.
Yeah.
What?
Is it going to encourage people to now just abuse women?
How is that a good message to put out into the world?
Don't get me wrong. I've not really checked Twitter today, so I don't know if I have been voted the voice of women everywhere. But this film...
You have. It's fine.
You've still got it.
This film is offensive.
Yeah.
In that respect. I mean, it is basically like... It's okay to hurt a woman if she's signed a contract and allow you to.
Yeah, or if he's got a chiselled jawline.
Yeah. Well, yeah, she's not even signed the contract.
He does wear a good suit as well. He did look very, very pristine in that grey suit.
Do we ever find out why he's so rich? What the hell does he do?
I think it must have been passed down in his family. He is literally Batman. he's not earned it.
You see him in a business, like you see him in his office, and occasionally he's on his phone. Oh yeah, I've got to go to this meeting. But what does he do? There is again no depth. You don't know anything about this man.
I want a backstory.
I think he makes pencils.
Yeah, good ones.
Yeah.
Maybe he makes S&M gear.
Maybe he's just testing it out.
Gets it all at discount rates.
Yeah.
Couple more faults as well. So this girl is
lot more than that.
This girl is this sweet innocent virgin. She lives with a uni friend. And her uni friend, I don't care what anyone says, was 45 years old.
Yeah.
And she must be 20?
Yeah, because they've just graduated. So they're supposed to be 21 or something like that. And as you say, her housemate was in her
40s. I don't know what's more believable, that her housemate is 20 as well, or that she never got laid at uni. Do you know what I mean? She's 20. I don't believe that she would have not done anything.
I have nothing to say to that.
I'm glad we saw it because it's made a good talking point. We could have sat here and talked about a masterpiece instead, a really good film that we all got a lot from. But it was funny. We went to the cinema. We're never going to walk in the cinema again and get kind of people laughing and clapping that you've walked into a film. That was funny.
Well, not yet, but
the next film we see, we could watch any piece of crap right now and it will be a masterpiece compared to what we just saw.
I would watch Interstellar again after this.
Yeah. I will still say on record that Tusk is worse than that.
And what score did you give Tusk?
1 out of 10.
Mm.
This is interesting then.
Is there anything else you want to say? Anything else anyone wants to rip into? Or should we go to the scores?
Oh, there's plenty more I want to rip into, but we don't have time.
Yeah. Should we hit the scores?
Yep.
Mark, go on then. If it's not a 1, what is it?
2. Because I can't put it as a 1. I can't. Tusk was absolutely worse than that, and it's 1. I'd even go close to 3 for this, because it's that much better than Tusk. But, no, it's going to be a 2. I did like the helicopter. I thought that was quite a cool helicopter. I wanted it to be mixed with, like, Commando and be shot down, but that looked cool. There's some nice little shots of the city and stuff. That was all right.
Yeah.
I love that. I've got 50 shades, and I like the helicopter. Adam.
0.
You're not allowed. It's 1 to 10.
No, 0.
Can't do it.
Can't do it.
Not allowed.
I'm not giving this a 1. I'm not unrated.
Give it 1.
Go on, give it one.
I'm not giving it 1.
Give it 1. Come on, you've got to give it 1.
I'm abstaining from this unless I can give it a 0.
No.
It's single-handedly the worst piece of shit I've ever seen.
Let him give it 0.
Okay.
It's not as if he's trying to mark a good film as 0. It is one of the worst pieces of shit. I'm giving it 1, and that's purely because there's one scene where he tries to get her to sign the contract, and it's in this sort of red room. And it's actually quite a well-filmed scene. It was the one point in the film I thought, that actually looks good. That's a good bit of direction. So for that, it gets 1 out of 10.
I think I came back after going for a leak halfway through that scene. So I didn't even see the whole
It comes out on Blu-ray, we'll watch it again.
I'd rather not.
Definitely not.
So it's a 1. 0, 1, 2, down the middle, 1.
1 out of 10. 50 Shades of Grey.
It's too much.
You've got the lowest rating and it can't be beaten.
Lower than Sharknado 2.
And rightfully so.
Right then, next week, boys, anything that can be better than this?
Yes, we are going to go and see a new film from director Neil Blomkamp, known for Elysium and District 9. We're going to go and see Chappie.
It looks unreal.
It does look very
good. Like it looks like Short Circuit on Ecstasy. Can't wait.
And if I remember correctly, Neil Blomkamp's the guy who's just been given Alien?
Correct.
So clearly he's doing something right.
This is going to be a good film and it's going to definitely make up for 50 Shades.
Yeah.
Next week.
Awesome.
Chappie.
This past Sunday was the 87th Annual Academy Awards, aka the Oscars. On our website, skiptotheend.co.uk, prior to the event, we all made predictions on the 8 main categories, and the results are in. Adam, you and I are joint winners with 6 out of 8 correct. Mark, you get the wooden spoon, 5. 5 out of 8. So, shame.
Did so well with the nominations.
Shame.
Shame.
So let's talk about the Oscars themselves then. What do we think to the eventual winners? Let's talk about the big two to begin with. Both Best Film and Best Director went to Birdman and the director of Birdman, Alejandro González Iñárritu.
I said to you on Sunday, I had this real weird feeling that Birdman, the more I thought about it, was gonna win it.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to go back and change, because after the Golden Globes, I thought, maybe, yeah, I think because it took 12 years to make, Boyhood was still going to take it. But I just had this feeling that maybe Birdman would just be quite ironic that they voted for that film, considering it has a bit of a dig about them all the way through. And I just thought it might be that kind of film that just shocks everybody. Because a lot of people I read about say Birdman is terrible.
Mm.
See, you know, a lot of people on Twitter are saying it's a dreadful film.
I didn't enjoy it.
But Birdman doesn't necessarily have a go at the Academy. The Academy is, correct me if I'm wrong, but you have to have won an Oscar to vote.
I think you can be voted in by other means, but mostly it's winners and nominees.
So generally it is actors or people who work within the acting business.
Yeah.
So Birdman to them, I mean, Ben, I think Ben may have mentioned it at the time, the Academy love a film about themselves.
They absolutely do. The Academy and Hollywood in general loves to talk about and write about and celebrate films that are about acting. So I think it's no surprise that it was the front runner to win. I finally got round to seeing Boyhood just before the Oscars, which I enjoyed. I didn't rave about it as much as you did, Mark. I know how much you loved it. I thought it was a good film, not a great film. I think it was better than Birdman, because I didn't particularly like Birdman. I can see that Iñárritu deserved the Oscar more than Linklater, though. Because what Linklater did was an amazing formal experiment in filmmaking. This whole 12-year thing, getting together for a couple of weeks a year to film some scenes, it's a great experiment. But beyond that, it's just a standard, well-directed film. Whereas the Iñárritu stuff with making Birdman seem as if it was all one long take, that was a real high-wire act that could have fell on its arse, and he did a great job with it. So I think in terms of the actual quality of the filmmaking, Iñárritu did do more than Linklater, so I think he did just edge it.
I think that's a fair point. I mean, we made our predictions, and after we made them, I actually then went to watch Boyhood. I was very of the thought that because of how long it took to make the film, that maybe they'll give him the award as a recompense for his time, I guess. But after watching Boyhood, I kind of got the similar feeling to you. I liked the film, but I didn't think it was exceptional.
Yeah.
And the direction, as you mentioned, was very standard. It was good.
But they're so different. It's when you think of Boyhood, I know it's got Patricia. How do you pronounce it? Yeah, obviously, fair play to her. She was outstanding. But you didn't have that amazing full-on cast where you got, you know, Edward Norton, Emma Stone. It was so different. You know, they're working with like an all-star lineup for Birdman. Everyone's fantastic in it. You know, he cast his daughter as one of the main parts, you know, and as a kid, you probably just thought it was a bit of fun each week going off with her dad filming a little bit of a film. 12 years later, she's, you know, seeing herself winning the Golden Globe. So they're very, very different films. But it now makes me want to go and revisit and watch Birdman again. So when it comes out on Blu-ray, I'm really looking forward to actually going back and watching it. Because I know you said then you didn't think it was that great. Mm. But I came out of the cinema giving it a 9. I absolutely loved it. But maybe if I watch it again, I'm either going to not enjoy it and say, actually, yeah, Ben's right. Or I'm going to be like, yes, that is worthy of its Oscar.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the time when we reviewed it, I said I'll never watch it again. But I've changed my mind on that. I do want to watch it again to see if I
have missed anything
and not appreciated it as much as I should have, because it won the best original screenplay as well, which I think was one of the predictions you got right, Adam. Mm-hmm. Whereas Mark and I both had, I think wouldn't have been Imitation Game, would it? That's adapted.
No, we had that one. Adapted.
Oh, we had Grand Budapest. We both had Grand Budapest. Yeah, which again I watched yesterday. For the first time, amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant film. And I don't particularly care for Wes Anderson. I think his work is too twee, but I thought this was so good. And Ralph Fiennes should have been nominated for Best Actor.
He's phenomenal.
He's hilarious in that film.
I'm glad you like that.
Oh, yeah, big time. I thought it was brilliant.
I wish I'd seen it earlier. It kind of is the most Wes Anderson film you're ever going to get. You know, you might as well just have a person with a hedgehog sellotape to their head walking past. It really is so over the top, but... Wow.
Great fun.
The way it was filmed.
Yeah. And I think that probably should have won Best Screenplay, because I think it is a better screenplay than Birdman.
I just think the Oscars have just annoyed me this year. Like, with Cooper and Carell being nominated for Best Actor, it's undeserved.
Yeah. In their place should have been Gyllenhaal or Ayelowo or Ralph Fiennes. All three of those put in better performances than Carell and Cooper.
Miles Teller.
Miles Teller, absolutely.
On that subject, let's be happy. We didn't get any shocks because of this, and it was the most worthy Oscar of the year for me. J.K. Simmons. At least he got it. Imagine the uproar. You know, there was no better performance. Even in my opinion, there's not a lead actor performance that would have topped that performance this year.
Yeah.
I think he is the finest performance in one film of 2014, isn't it, really, to go through. But there's no better performance. Yeah. He should be the lead actor in that film, you know. It's unbelievable.
It was a two-hander. He and Teller were effectively co-leads. You know?
Yeah.
But it was a superb performance. I loved his speech at the Oscars, because he's been giving speeches all season because he's won every award going. He basically got tired of the same cliches of thanking his agent and all that kind of shit. So he got up on the stage and basically said, if you're lucky enough to have a mum and a dad or one of them, call them. Don't text them, don't email them, call them and say thank you and say I love you. And that was basically the entire extent of his speech, which I thought was really nice.
He's a great guy, though, judging from his speeches and his interviews that he's given about the film. You can generally see he's not only happy to be where he is, he knows how lucky he is to be where he is.
Yeah.
As much as it's a great performance from him, and, you know, he's channeled that. He knows the script is there. He knows he has to... He's the guy who comes into work, he's got that script, and he then channels the performance. So it's a symbiotic relationship between everyone involved in that film in Whiplash. Mm. You know, Damien Chazelle has gone in there and directed a fantastic film. Miles Teller's gone in there and put in a great performance. Simmons has gone in there and put a great performance in. But it's symbiotic. They all need each other to do that.
They do. And one of the biggest parts of that, which also won an Oscar for Whiplash, was the editing, which I think is something we talked about when we reviewed it. We said how brilliantly edited it was, the shots of the actual drums being played and stuff. So I was really chuffed for them that won Best Editing.
That's really good.
I think I was about 4-for-4 at one point in Oscar predictions.
Yeah, I think you started really strongly, didn't you? Let's just wrap this up then with the last few of the acting awards. I think it was fairly obvious that Julianne Moore was going to win Best Actress. She's won everything going. We've not seen that film yet because it doesn't come out here until, I think, next week.
Yeah.
But, I definitely want to see her performance in that.
It's meant to be absolutely outstanding. She steals the whole film. And anyone that can kind of portray dementia and put it to film, and people that have got dementia and people that have got families that have been affected have all said... It really does raise your awareness for it, and I think it could be a really powerful movie. We actually saw the trailer, didn't we, at 50 Shades? So, I don't think it'll be on an episode, but it'd be good for us to go and see
it. It looks like a very accurate performance as well.
Mm-hmm. A performance that wasn't nominated, but that was rather excellent, was Jennifer Aniston in Cake. I've actually just watched that and written a review for that, which is going to go up on the website on Sunday, so check that out. But I think she should have been nominated, having seen that film.
I really want to see that.
Yeah, it's good. Best Actor went to Eddie Redmayne. It was a toss-up between Redmayne and Keaton. I think they both deserved it, so I wasn't really upset that Redmayne won. I think I would have preferred Keaton, just because, you know, he's Beetlejuice, man. But I think Redmayne deserved it. He was excellent.
That's fair enough. So, last thing on the topic then. Neil Patrick Harris performance.
Shit.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievably bad.
Just dreadful.
Yeah.
One thing that made me laugh was there was a couple of jokes he made that I actually kind of laughed at, but no one in the audience was laughing. They were killing him completely.
Yeah, he didn't start strongly though, did he? I think he lost the crowd right at the start, so that he just couldn't win them round. But yeah, he wasn't good. But then again, Oscar presenters never are. They're always abysmal. Do you remember Anne Hathaway and James Franco?
Oh, God, yeah.
Car crash that was.
Absolutely dreadful.
Just get Gervais in.
Yeah.
Well, that's our little Oscar speech.
Oscar speech?
A speech about the Oscars. I like it. Decent.
Rewatch time then. So this week we're rewatching Predator, which was my choice.
Yeah.
I had to make up for it after suggesting The Phantom Menace in my first week. So, boys, did I make up for it?
Hell yeah.
Excellent.
Unbelievable.
Good to
And it was made in the 80s, so you've sold me straight away.
One of the best films of all time then, surely, Mark?
We'll come to that.
Excellent. So, yeah, Predator is a fantastic film. It's one of Arnie's best.
Tell me what it's about. For any of those people, there might be some out there that have never seen Predator.
Right, okay, Mark, no problem. Well, we've got Arnold Schwarzenegger, who plays a commando leader called Dutch, who's tricked into going into the jungle under false pretenses with his commando unit by Apollo Creed.
That's his real name.
Or Carl Weathers. Mm-hmm. And they end up finding out that basically they're being hunted by an alien creature known as the Predator. He's been well known for skinning victims and hanging them from trees and just hunting for the last few months.
That's it, really, isn't it?
That's it. That's
that's
really
all you need
nice
to know. It's Arnie versus an alien. Yeah. Sci-fi with Arnie.
It took us all of 10 seconds to give you the plot of this incredible film, whereas it took Mark nearly 4 hours to tell us what happened in 50 Shades of Grey, even though nothing happened because it's a terrible shit film.
So I'm going to throw it to Ben.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
I enjoyed it, man. I've not seen this film in so long, and I honestly don't know if I've seen it all the way through before. I've certainly seen parts of it, or it might be one of those that's just been around in the public consciousness for so long that I think I've seen it, and maybe I haven't. But yeah, I loved it. Right from the very start, I thought it was great. Like, there's a bit when Arnie's character meets Carl Weathers' character, and they sort of high-five in mid-air, but it becomes a mid-air arm wrestle. And you see, and there's like a close-up of their biceps just flexing, yep, and neither one will give. And you're like, this is so 80s. This is amazing. That's just a great way to start. But it's a good, fun film. There's about, I think it was something you mentioned to me, Adam, before we started recording. There's piss-all dialogue. There's barely any speech at all. And which is for the best, because, you know,
it's an action film.
It's an action film, and also Arnold Schwarzenegger can barely speak English.
So. But when there is dialogue, they come out with some of the best lines ever, the one-liners.
Oh, God, my favourite was Jesse the Body Ventura, when one of the guys points out that he's bleeding, and Jesse Ventura goes, "I ain't got time to bleed."
Amazing.
Unreal.
Really cool.
And that's how 80s it is. It's when wrestlers starred in things.
Yeah.
Big films as well.
I think my other favourite line is when Arnie stabs someone through like a machete into a piece of wood, and he says, "Stick around." Nice.
It's amazing. I noticed some of the lines as well were quite degrading. Remember the joke? He's always making jokes about his other partner's pussy.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? And he's like, "I was going down with my wife this morning, and I said to her, 'God, your pussy's big. God, your pussy's big.'"
So why did he say that twice?
Exactly.
I didn't. It was an echo.
It's amazing. Absolutely brilliant. Degrading, but funny. You wouldn't get away with that now.
You would.
I think you probably would. Yeah. Have you seen Sex Tape?
Unfortunately, yes. Predator, for me, it sounds like I'm joking, but is one of the best films ever made. Okay. There is no other film like Predator. You know,
Predator 2?
Well, no, that's horrific.
Not as bad as Predators.
That's not
Alien versus Predator.
Taking, you know, you're talking bad, but let me
to
get
catch
back
a predator.
Yeah. It's an incredible film. It is unbelievable from start to finish. The fact that it is so kind of dated, when you see the Predator and the computer-generated images are so dated, but you don't laugh at it, you love it. You love the fact that it looks like it was done on an Atari or something. It's horrendous at times. It's probably one of the films that has dated the most.
Those computer-generated images, when you see the sort of heat vision of the Predator, to me just looks like a bad Instagram filter.
Yeah, but it's great, and I love it. And I love Arnie in it, and I love the action and the over-the-top explosions. And, you know, it was way before Michael Bay, so it was really well done. But you just don't get films like this anymore, where just pure hour-and-a-half action.
Mm.
It was made to be enjoyed with beer and pizza.
Yeah.
It's that film. The lads come round, you order yourself a Domino's or other pizza brand. I've had to do that for a while. Papa John's, you know, whatever pizza you want. Order, you know, get loads of crates of beer and just sit there and just have fun. And I can't remember the time. Yes, they do Expendables now and other films like that. They're not on par with this. This is just from start to finish. There's not a big storyline. It's complete mayhem, explosions, going after this creature, and you don't care. You just want to see it get in a fight with Arnie. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you are so rooting for Arnie to track this thing down. And when he does track it down, it's horrendous, you know. And it's the fact that the way he actually defeats it is by, it's like a tree stump that comes down and kind of squashes it. But even then, you don't know if it's really dead or not. And it's such a good film.
I mean, one of my favourite things, and it's something that's kind of been expanded on in the Predator universe, because like many films that kind of got a cult following, they've gone and expanded in books and comics and games and things like that, is the fact that predators are a proud species. They hunt and they won't kill innocents. And I think there's a point in the film, where they show it, where the predator comes up against the woman in the film, who is unarmed, and he leaves her alone because it's not a sport. It's a sport to them. There's no sport in killing an unarmed person. So when he's fighting Arnie at the end and he realises, you know, Arnie doesn't have any weapons, he's going hand to hand, the predator does the same.
Yeah.
He takes his shoulder cannon off, he takes his mask off, everything, and just goes hand to hand with him. And that is so cool.
That is very cool.
It's just awesome. I just want to watch it again. That's the one thing about it. When it finished, I was like, I'm well up for more, so I want to watch Commando now. Or Predator 2 is pretty bad, but I would have been happy with more.
I don't mind Predator 2.
Danny that one, Glover. I've definitely seen Predator 2.
Danny Glover.
I like that.
Dreadful.
I like Danny Glover.
No,
I'm not a fan. But do you know in that film with the body count, this has surprised me actually, 69 humans, mm-hmm. one scorpion, we know why that is,
yeah.
I love that scene, one boar, and one predator. That is pretty good. Most of them, I'm sure, are all Dutch that does that as well.
Yeah.
But good death toll. That's what you want. You want that sort of stats. I don't like these films where only one person or two die.
Boring.
I'm sure more animals died than that when the predator exploded.
Yeah. But it's an 80s film, so I was absolutely loving it. And I didn't realise how successful it was. Only Beverly Hills Cop in 1987 actually beat it at the box office.
Is that right?
That was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Arnie was the box office king back in the day.
That's awesome, isn't it? Now, you don't, like I said, I really am picking up on this. You don't get films like this. And if they did, people would just think it's a spoof. And that's why stuff like Wolf Cop doesn't do very well and get these blockbuster weekends where they go and break the box office. But it's
too much
a shame.
CGI.
It's a shame.
Do you know what I love? I was reading something yesterday that apparently this film came about as a bit of a joke. Because I think it was the producers or writers of the Rocky series were joking about how Rocky had fought everyone there is to fight. The only one left he could fight is an alien. And they went, hold on. How could we make a film in that vein? And that's how Predator came to be. It was a joke about Rocky fighting an alien.
They even got Apollo Creed involved.
Exactly.
Yeah. I genuinely, honestly will say this now. It will be, if we had to do a top 10 of all time, this will be in there. That's
really?
How much I enjoyed it.
Yikes.
Yeah, I was so happy that Adam made up for episode one with this. And it has been a couple of years since I revisited it. And I just loving it. I just, for an hour and a half, it was just so nice just to switch off and see so much action and explosions. And yeah, it's probably the top 10 films of all time.
Do you know what I love about some of the action scenes and the explosions? It's something that I think it's been phased out now because it's quite cheesy. You don't see it so much in modern films. It's when they'll show an explosion from one angle and then straight after they'll show it again from another angle, but they'll have rewound the footage by about a second. So it's as if you're seeing the explosion again and then there might be a third angle. It's the same explosion
it's brilliant.
Again. They don't do that so much now because it's unrealistic and cheesy, but I bloody love it.
Quintessentially 80s.
Hell yeah.
Did we mention this when we had that episode?
I don't think we did. We may have.
If you haven't listened to that episode, we talk about our favourite 80s films and basically go and listen to it. It's on iTunes or you can also listen on Podomatic, but all of them are on there. But yeah, that's a... God, I can't believe we missed that out.
I imagine we must have said it. Do you know what's an interesting little tidbit as well? Do you know who was originally in the Predator suit?
I read, and I don't know if it's true, was it Van Damme?
Yeah, it was Jean-Claude Van Damme was in the suit originally, but he moaned too much.
So they
kicked him
off.
So they got rid of him, and he's about 5'8", and then they replaced him with a fella who's 7'2", which was a good choice, because you want
very good choice.
Predator to be a big dominating fella, not a short Belgian man who can kick you.
That's what he's known for. That's what I was going to say on his gravestone.
Sorry, did you say short balding man?
Belgian. They're not looking for you, Danny.
Fine.
How much as well, this is one thing that I loved, the Predator blood.
Yeah.
That green goo.
Kind of disgusting. It looked like bloody... there are other energy drinks available, but like Mountain Dew, it's that real weird... glow stick kind of, yeah.
Is there cool. anything more 80s alien than green blood?
Oh yeah, all aliens had green blood in the 80s.
I love it.
As well they should.
Oh, it's great. It's a great film. I'm really glad, obviously, you guys love it as much as I do.
It's the best choice yet.
It is a fantastic film to watch.
It is. Are we going to rate this now?
Yeah.
All we can just keep saying is how great it was and I love explosions and it's made in the 80s, but let's rate it.
10.
Do you know what? 10.
Yeah, I'm giving it 8. I think it's a very good film, but as far as 80s action movies go, I have several that I prefer to this, so I couldn't possibly give it a 10, but I did enjoy it a hell of a lot, so it's 8.
Two 10s well, and an 8.
We'll call it a 9.
You guys know my rule on it. It's a 9 until it's had staying power in my top 25, top 50, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got staying power. I love it still, after many, many years.
All right, then. So as I've given it an 8, should we give it an overall skip to the end rewatch rating of 9 out of 10?
9 out of 10.
Phenomenal. I believe now, round circle, it's you, Ben.
It is my choice. Now...
pressure's on, by the way, because that film was awesome.
A couple of times we've mentioned about how Adam fucked us over with episode 1, The Phantom Menace.
Don't swear.
And I hate him for that, and I will always hate him for it.
Even after Predator?
Even still. And I owe you a punishment for this, so you're going to get it. The rewatch on the next episode. Oh, yeah. You know what's coming. Matrix 3. We're doing it. We're watching it. Matrix 3.
This is going to be hilarious.
Great film.
Looking forward to that, Adam?
You probably can't hear that, but he's banging his head against the mic. Next week. Matrix Revolutions.
Thanks, Ben.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Ben, Adam.
Yeah.
We've just reviewed, obviously, 50 Shades. I think that made me realise that giving is important. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Yes, Mark.
We like to give.
I don't like where this is going, but
no. Okay. Our listeners are there for us to be given it to. Let's give some prizes away.
Yes.
We mentioned on our last episode, which is on iTunes now, we went to basically the Comic-Con in Telford and we met some cool people. We had the chance to get some cool prizes because we always want to make sure that we can give as much as we can. Ben, tell me, what were some of the prizes that you loved?
Well, three prizes we came up with on our last Comic-Con special podcast. We've got a T-shirt with a Loki design, Loki from the Marvel comics and films. We've also got a graphic novel called Twisted Dark, written by Neil Gibson of T Publications. And then the third prize we have is
a signed photo of Commander Shepard.
That was
by
the
Mark Meer.
By Mark Meer from the Mass Effect series of games, I believe.
Correct.
So we've had a lot of people come through on Twitter. We've had a few answers come through, so thanks for that. Facebook as well. But I know that there's some people that will just listen to our episodes and they won't listen to, you know, the MCM specials because they want to hear more of us.
Hold on. Are we about to give something else away?
We are, but I also want to give all those people that didn't listen to the MCM special, those thousands of people that come to us, I don't want them to miss out.
Yeah.
They're loyal. They're good people. So those people are going to have the chance to also enter this competition. So what we're going to do is next week on episode 16, when we discuss Chappie, we're going to actually announce all the winners in one go.
Sure.
Okay. So to find out how to win the competition, you go to www.skiptheend.co.uk. We don't need to repeat the questions. You know where the website is. It's on there. But we're also going to tweet them and we're going to Facebook them. But to add to it, the good friends at Paramount, who we met, they've sorted us out with a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Blu-ray and DVD set. It comes in a really nice, shiny slipcase. It's quite rare. It's kind of a embossed one, so it actually looks like the turtle heads are popping out. It's a really, really cool design. I'm not going to lie, I wanted to keep it. I'm not going to lie to you. But we're going to give it away. Adam, think of a question that you want to give to the people out there so they can win this amazing Blu-ray.
Okay. Well, seeing as we met them at the Comic-Con,
yep.
We also met a graffiti artist.
Yep.
At the Comic-Con, who was doing a bit of artwork for Paramount on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yep.
So, to win this prize, what was that graffiti artist's name?
Ben, this is not something that's going to be sort of common knowledge.
No.
What would you do if you didn't know this answer?
Well, I'll tell you what I'd do.
Yeah.
I would go
yep.
to skiptotheend.co.uk
yep.
or skiptotheend.podomatic.com or maybe even iTunes.
Yeah.
And I would find our MCM Midlands Comic-Con special.
Yep.
Have a little listen to that. Find out the name and enter the competition. That's what I'd do.
Is it that easy, Ben?
It's that easy, Adam.
My God.
Yikes.
So, to win it, that's all you've got to do.
Yep. Four prizes up for grabs, all winners to be announced on episode 16 of the Skip to the End podcast.
I don't know about you two, but I bloody love a good question.
Do you? Me too. Yeah.
We know this by now. This is the best part. Adam, look, you're smiling already.
I love them. You got Q's. We've got A's.
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 Oh, cool.
Answers.
No worries. So last week we had a question that we actually took away. It came from Gemma Hurst. She's actually got a blog, and I am going to plug it because she's plugging us like mad at the moment. Popcorn Heart. Google it. She talks about movies. She's basically trying to be Skip to the End. I don't blame her. She's doing well. Good on her.
If you're going to copy anyone, copy the best.
Exactly. Plagiarism. Send the lawyers. No. She said to us last week, I think we definitely needed some real thought. The best ever scene from a film in the history of cinema that we've ever seen.
Yeah.
That's pretty heavy going.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to throw it straight to you, Ben.
No, I'll start
oh,
off.
All
right.
Because
whoa.
Mine hasn't changed.
Yeah, I didn't think it would.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
So, okay. Last week I said Hans Lander.
Yeah.
The introduction to Hans Lander in Inglourious Basterds.
Was that Christopher Waltz?
Christoph Waltz. Literally the best scene I've ever seen. It's so tense. There's some... Tarantino is the master of dialogue, and it just all comes to a head in that. It's a fantastic scene. If you haven't, we've spoken about it to death on the podcast before. with Hans Lander, so I don't really want to go too much in depth, but I've not changed. That's mine, so beat that.
Okay. Well, I initially said the same thing, but I wanted to go away and see if I could come up with anything else. So I've gone with the dog napping scene in Beverly Hills Chihuahua 2.
Excellent, excellent.
That is good. Don't get me wrong. That is so far one of the best, but I think there's something else more than that.
Yeah, you're probably right. Well, I actually stuck with Tarantino, and you're right about Tarantino's dialogue. The scene that I came to in the end was the final scene of Pulp Fiction. It's when Jules and the rest of the characters are in the diner, mm-hmm. and it's when Tim Roth's character and his girlfriend, they decide to stick up the diner. And Samuel L. Jackson, being the bad motherfucker that he is, I can say that because that's what it says on his wallet.
Cheapens it.
Shame. He pulls out his gun and he sits down with Tim Roth's character and he basically says to him, you know, this is the point where I would say this cold shit that I always say, you know, the path of the righteous man is beset on all sides, etc., etc. But then he actually starts analysing why he says that and about how he, you know, he thought he was the shepherd, but or is he the weak? You know, it's a brilliantly written scene. It's a marvellous piece of acting from Samuel L. Jackson. And yeah, I think that is, if not my absolute favourite, very close to the top, without thinking of anything else.
Wow. I think that does top the dog napping, but that's yeah, just.
Two very good scenes to beat here, Mark.
Mine's about my whole life, so the whole history of my life of watching films, so I've got to take it back to when I was a kid. For the scene that stuck with me that I will think is genius is Jurassic Park.
Mm.
So the first time that we actually see the T-Rex, so very simply done. There's a glass of water on the kind of dashboard. We see this slight... That does kind of work on a podcast. You can't... Yeah, we can see it.
I get you.
And it's the introduction. So you sit there and you know something's coming. And you've seen a few dinosaurs up to this point, but this is the T-Rex. The next thing we see by the side of the car is the T-Rex head. Still right now, that looks like it's real. T-Rex head.
That sounds like you've got having a really bad shit. I've got a T-Rex head.
But yeah, that scene has always stuck with me and I still think is just absolute genius. For me, it's my favourite scene in a film and I absolutely adore it. And just to take myself back to when I watched that as a kid, I was scared. Mm. That glass, just, this is, if it's making that happen, what the hell is this? Then you know, that isn't the singer of Slipknot. But yeah, it was, it was, that's mine. I'm sorry it's not much dialogue, but that's the one that stuck with me.
No. Good choice.
The only one I was thinking about as well as that was, we're going to need a bigger boat from Jaws. That was so close. That was so close, but it was just, no, that was it. Good question. We've got loads of questions this week, and I'm going to say it now. They have, all of our listeners out there have set the bar. I'm not just going to say that. They have given us really decent questions this week, and we absolutely love them, so thank you. So the first one we had came from Twitter, which is @supernerds_UK. They've said to us all, can you remember the film that you first saw that actually made you want to go and find out more from the director? So, you know, for me, I'd probably say I was... This is going to annoy you, Ben. I was probably about 18. I went to visit my mate from uni. I wasn't as obsessed with films as I am now.
Let me guess. You saw Clerks, or as you pronounce it, Clerks, by Kevin Smith, and it made you want to know more about him. Am I right?
100%.
Yeah!
He hadn't brought out Chase and Amy. I was obsessed. I thought Clerks was amazing, or Clerks was amazing. And yeah, that... Fuck you. Yeah, that was the one. That was the film. That's the one. It was the first time I really showed an interest in, wow, this guy's got some really good ideas. It's obviously shot on a low budget. I want to know what else this guy's doing. And I read that he was working on Chase and Amy, which is a masterpiece. Mm. And that led to me... That was the first kind of thing that got me into Viewerskew and Kevin Smith. So I know you hate him, but it was a really nice thing that made me explore. And obviously since then, he's given us Tusk.
Hate's a strong word, surely.
Dislike.
I can't possibly hate the man, seeing as we might run into him at a future Comic-Con, perhaps. I'm coming around to his work.
We're going to watch Tusk, and I'll get you to say that again.
Definitely not. Well, mine, I would say, is Goodfellas. I think prior to seeing Goodfellas, I'd only ever taken notice of film in terms of acting and writing. It was either good or bad acting. It was either a good or bad script. I hadn't really thought about film in terms of direction. But then there's that scene in Goodfellas that's all like one take through the restaurant. And it's such a fabulous scene that the first time I saw it, it actually made me think, how did they pull that off? Who did this? And, you know, where did they come up with that? And then I found out about this fella, Martin Scorsese, and then, of course, I started watching things like Casino and all of his other movies, and I realised that this guy was a real auteur and that there was more to film than acting and scripts. And so, obviously, I went and discovered a lot more about him, and it's got me more into thinking about films in terms of direction, whereas I didn't used to.
Brilliant. Adam?
Well, mine's actually quite recent. About 7 years ago. It's Christopher Nolan with The Prestige.
Mm.
Awesome film.
Yeah, when I first took a glance at that and watched it all the way through, I was hugely, hugely impressed with the film. And it's the first film that actually made me look at who the director was. I then obviously discovered he'd done Batman Begins, and you know, there were other things that I hadn't seen yet. So I went, because Batman Begins, I'm not sure if I've mentioned this before, I originally didn't watch it in the cinema.
Yeah.
Because I had no hope, after Batman and Robin, I had no hope for Batman films ever.
What?
So I didn't bother, but that was one of the things for me. So I actually went back and started looking at his back catalogue as well. And as we all know, I've spoken about Nolan as one of my favourite directors of all time.
Yeah, I think we both rate him as our favourite.
And then Interstellar came out, I think, a week after that episode.
No, it's our worst.
So, but yeah, that was the one, The Prestige with Christopher Nolan.
Good question. Really thought-provoking.
Yeah, I like that.
Joe Simmons via Facebook. You die, you go to heaven, St. Peter says to you, as a reward, you can go back to Earth and you can be any movie character you want and live their life. Not just in that film, but for the rest of your life, you are that character from a film.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I need a bit of thinking time. So, Ben, sorry to put you on the spot.
My instant gut reaction to this is Han Solo.
Nice.
Because he's just the coolest mamma jamma that ever lived. But then, I'm also now thinking, I'd pretty much love to be Star-Lord.
Oh, he would be cool.
That would be cool as hell, wouldn't it?
Very cool.
Adam?
Well, I thought about it, and I actually started thinking, if I have his life, does that mean, like, if I choose a superhero, do I have his enemies as well?
Oh, yeah.
Because if I wanted to be, like, let's say Superman, would I have to die at the hands of Doomsday one day?
Yeah, it's
not a good idea.
Because that would really put a downer on it.
No, you'll come back, though. You'll be right.
That's fair. Yeah. Very true. Well, I'm very happy in my own life, to be honest with you. It's very cool. I'm part of a good podcast, you know. I've got a good life going for me.
But so you're going to come back as you?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
When they make the movie about Skip to the End, I'll just come back as that character of me and live my life again.
Yeah. So not the Penguin from Batman Returns.
I've already done that.
Or the shorter of the twins from Twins.
Done that.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
But if I had to choose any one character, it's going to be Batman.
Okay.
Cool.
So you want to have a life where your parents are shot in front of you?
Well, you know, I've got two parents already. They're kind of cool. I like them.
Oh, fair enough.
You don't get to keep them, though.
No, they go.
They're gone.
As soon as you make that choice, you come back.
I lose Thomas and Martha Wayne. I don't lose my own parents.
Yeah, you will, because you're dead. Yeah. And then you come back as Batman.
So, yeah.
And they're gone.
That life's gone,
mate. You can't then start going hanging around at your house in the Midlands of England with two people you're no longer related to.
You know your missus? Your missus. She's going to be set on fire. We've got to watch it in a building. Go and save her.
Oh, no. No, it wouldn't.
Why?
Not your current missus, not your actual
girlfriend.
No, this
is your life. You are Batman. You've got to go through everything that he's had.
But that didn't happen. I'm talking about the Batman and Robin.
Well, that's fine then. Great, great choice. No more questions. For me, I've got to go with... I'm going to be Wayne Campbell from Wayne's World. What a great life.
Funny on Wayne.
You get your own TV show, you get a hot girlfriend, you get to buy a really nice Fender Strat guitar and just organise a festival.
No Stairway.
No, exactly. But yeah, that would be a great life. I want to be... That's a great life. Does it all end badly, doesn't it? Because he has to go back to see the Naked Indian. It's not great.
It'll be all right.
It'll be all right.
Yeah. It'll be fine.
Brilliant. Good question again. So next one, at Danny3K on Twitter, favourite Simpsons character and why? I can answer this straight away because I absolutely adore him. Hans Moleman.
Yeah.
Not a massive character, just for the episode of, is it Ball Hits Man in Groin at the film contest. That is the one. Doing that noise and him. Oh, yeah. Amazing.
I've always been prone to Nelson Muntz.
Oh, he's a ledge. Ralph Wiggum as well. No, I'm going to go with Hans Moleman.
Oh, very good. I always love Troy McClure.
Very cool.
There's the episode where he's in the musical Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Still one of my favourite episodes of all time. But Hans Moleman runs a close second.
He is so cool.
No one's gay for a mole man.
I'd love to get the guy that does the voice on this podcast just to be Hans Moleman for a whole episode.
Mo Sizlak's good as well.
Yeah, Mo's great. I like McBain as well.
McBain.
I love Mo, man. Crowbar, this is a crowbar. But yeah, Next one is from Ellie Comparis, and she has said, who is your favourite movie composer?
That is a good question.
I would have said Danny Elfman. I used to love his work, but then he kind of just kept on constantly doing Tim Burton stuff, and it got annoying. I know it sounds ridiculous, he got too Danny Elfman, and it wasn't original. Lately, if it counts for doing scores, what's the guy from Nine Inch Nails?
Trent Reznor.
I'm really impressed with his stuff, because he just gives me a sense of the kind of the ambience, and I put myself in there. It makes me think, you know, it's subtle, but it's there, and without it, half of the films he's worked on would be pretty lame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think my front runner, I'm starting to tie with a little bit for the same reasons you've said about Danny Elfman. I would say Hans Zimmer.
But there gets
a point where he's too Zimmery. I think... did he do Interstellar? He did do Interstellar,
didn't
he?
That organ.
Yeah, but at least that was different. That wasn't the same sort of bong, bong stuff he did in Inception and other films. So I thought that was him branching out a little bit, but he can be too Zimmer at times.
Yeah.
I think Alexandre Desplat, who's doing a lot of films recently, I think he's been nominated for something like 8 Oscars in 10 years. He's doing some great work at the minute. His work on Grand Budapest Hotel was brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, you've kind of mentioned all the big ones, but John Williams.
Of course.
Always. Always has to be up there.
He isn't too John Williams either. I know that sounds wicked. I love his stuff. He's not too... Yes, you know it's his, but he's not annoying with it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely... You know it's his. Yeah, you know a John Williams
score. But in a good way.
Easily.
Not like, oh,
and
God.
And this is kind of the overstepping the mark Hans Zimmer's done recently, where Interstellar, too much organ.
It was annoying.
Yeah.
Really annoying.
It was overbearing.
That film has pissed me off, right? Because if you think about it, Matthew McConaughey... It's good in it, but it's annoying because the taste. This is going to sound wrong, but the taste he's left in your mouth is not great.
Are we talking about 50 Shades of Grey?
But it's not, is it? It's bad. You don't love him now because you're like, oh God.
Do you know what? He for me is the only one who came out of that film with any credit.
Yep.
He's not lost any cachet with me. I still think he rules. It's people like Anne Hathaway and Nolan that I despise now.
She did win the Skippy though, so fair play
to her.
She
earned it.
And Christopher Nolan has now, you know, annoyed us all. But you know that did a lot of damage to that film.
Mm.
Darius Cobb, favourite film location? This is a tough one.
So are we talking about an actual real place that exists, or are we talking about somewhere that could be...
It could be a film. Let's go with what we want. So it could be a place, it could be a film
set. So a location within a film.
Place.
So it doesn't have to be a real thing. It could be, yeah, all right. I think I can think of two then. One is real and one is absolutely not. The real one is the Rocky Steps from the film Rocky. Which Adam, your brother, John, and I are intending to visit when we go to New York later on in the year. We're going to get to Philly for a day and run up the steps.
Excellent.
Oh, well, I'll get up about 3 of them before passing out, but that's fine. And then I think in terms of a fictional one, I love the Rainbow Bridge in Thor. I think that's one of the bits of CGI. I think
the
that
Bifrost.
Looks, yeah, I think it looks unbelievable on screen.
You see, I looked at different locations ages ago because I actually wanted to bring this as a topic at some point. And Asgard was one that stuck out with me.
Yeah.
But nowhere from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
The floating head in space. How cool does that look?
Yeah, it was very good.
So it has to be that for me.
For me, in Ghostbusters, in Lower Manhattan, when there's the firehouse,
yeah,
that is cool. That looks so awesome. And that's got to be up there.
Yeah.
And I see photos of it now. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, you need to go there when you go to New York.
Yeah.
Go and visit that, because that's a great place. And also the library, isn't there, from that film that's very famous. But that would be so cool to go in there and try and slide down the pole.
50 Shades of Grey.
I'm trying not to be immature here. Next question, I've got loads. Mike Lee on Facebook. What film have you seen that should be terrible but actually turned out really good? And then flip it. What film did you see that was going to be amazing and turned out to be dog turd?
Interstellar. Interstellar is the obvious answer to that one.
Yeah.
It should have been a work of art and it was a work of shit.
I'm going with Interstellar.
Yeah, I am. I can't... I've wrote it. I can't think of another film that's us so excited.
As for the reverse of ones that potentially if I looked at the script, if I looked at the plot overall and thought, this is going to be terrible... Whiplash.
Well, oh, really? Oh, you didn't have high expectations?
No, not at all. Oh, okay. I thought, you know, a film about a jazz drummer was never going to entice me at all.
But the trailer was so good. Even after seeing
the trailer was tense,
yeah.
And I liked that.
Yeah.
But I just thought, it's a film about drumming. Is this going to be any good?
That's
but
fair.
Hugely impressed with it, you know.
Yeah.
Not even more so than good. I mean, this was a film that, in theory, should have, first glance, I thought was going to be not great.
Yeah.
Turned out to be probably one of the best films of the year.
A film that I thought that we saw recently that I thought was going to be utter garbage, but then I enjoyed quite a bit, was The Guest. I didn't expect... I mean, it's not a classic film by any stretch, but it was good fun and so silly.
We pan that film quite a lot. I listened to that again. It's one of our first ever episodes, and I go back and listen to them, and do you know what? It is a lot better than we made out. I think we kind of give it a bit of a shoo-in, but it's actually I really want to go and watch it again.
I think it's an incredibly silly film. I, if memory serves, I'm pretty sure we said, though, that we enjoyed it more than we thought we would.
Yeah.
And
I
remember us saying that we were all sat there with big shit-eating grins on our faces, just smiling all the way through it, because it was so daft and so fun.
For me, it's going to be... Someone gave me the DVD once, so I'm not watching this crap, and I watched it and loved it. Mean Girls. That should
great
not,
film.
Yeah, that should not great be film. A film that lads are all going, oh, brilliant, but it's an absolutely fantastic film.
Oh, it should be.
Well, if they hadn't seen it and you give them the case and it's like Lindsay Lohan and her college friends, you know, you'd be like, what is this crap?
I don't even
but it's a masterpiece.
Yeah, I'd throw Pitch Perfect in. It was not a masterpiece, is it?
Pitch Perfect.
I would throw Pitch Perfect in with Mingo.
Yeah.
To
Easy A.
Easy A and Clueless as well. There's this whole sort of raft of films of that
ilk. Do you guys want to come over one day at the weekend? We'll do our nails and we'll sit and watch these four films back to back.
Yeah, can you braid my hair?
No.
Wow, I love these questions. So next one is Richard Francis on Facebook. Film trailers that you were really excited for but then didn't deliver.
Foxcatcher.
So that trailer made you think, wow, this is going to be amazing.
I thought it was going to be an amazing thriller.
Yeah?
Nowhere near.
Do you know what? I can't think of one off the top of my head. This is one I'd have to take time to think about. But there is one that I know a lot of people were up in arms about. Do you remember when the trailer for Drive came out? And everyone thought it was going to be this sort of high-intensity, you know, movie about high-speed car chases or something. And it wasn't that. It was a violent existential thriller.
What's a load of shabby arseholes went, oh, this is not Fast and Furious. I'm angry.
Exactly right. Some woman in America, I believe, actually sued the production company because she said, you've misled me. I paid $15 to go and see this and there wasn't enough car chases.
How did you not like it, though?
Do you know what? I haven't done it. Yeah. I've not wished anyone dead. I want that woman who complained dead.
Yeah.
And she deserves to, and I hope you both agree. Complain and actually sue.
She did. She said, yeah. It's like these people who sue McDonald's for getting them fat.
Ugh, they're all going to die anyway.
Insanity.
In the modern age when there's reviews everywhere.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Ugh. Insane.
For me, Skyline. That trailer looked really cool. Big sort of sci-fi great film. It's got the guy from Bloody Scrubs in it. I was going to love it. It is dreadful.
This film is only marginally better. And 50 Shades of Grey.
I love how you think having the second fiddle from Scrubs meant that it was going to be a great film.
How dare you diss Donald Faison?
It was in Clueless.
Incredible. Ben Sinclair McDonald came through on Facebook. Is there a film that you would like to see remade? We've had that question a few times. Please listen to our episodes and don't keep repeating the same stuff.
Let me answer that, actually. Because, in principle, I think we've said in the past, Adam, I think you and I have basically said the same thing. We don't like remakes in general. We don't really advocate for them. But I've been going through a real Spawn phase at the minute.
Oh,
I've watched
the
Spawn film. I've watched the animated film. I've been reading the old comics.
And I'm
loving a bit. And I've been listening to the soundtrack, which is awesome. And I love that Spawn film, but I think they could have done better. So I would like to see them remake that. And do you know who I'd like to see play Spawn? You know Chad L. Coleman, who played Tyrese in Walking Dead?
Yes.
I think he'd be great, because he's a big, burly son of a bitch. You know, he's got the superhero build, but he's also quite introspective and can be, you know, have that sort of dark side to the character, as well as being an action hero. So I want to see that.
He proved a couple of times in The Walking Dead, actually, how good his acting ability is.
Yeah.
I think, again, as Ben said, I generally don't advocate remakes. I don't think there's any point to them. They're generally hideous things that don't deserve to be made. But Green Lantern, if I'm choosing someone to actually be in it, just Mark Strong and Sinestro. I'm going to keep banging the drum about this until hopefully Zack Snyder listens.
Yeah, Nathan Fillion as Hal Jordan.
He texted me today and said he has got a bit more work to do on the Batman versus Superman, but what he will get around to listening.
I'm just looking forward to seeing more pictures. We've just seen Aquaman.
Yeah,
looks
cool.
Ace.
Which I think looks ace, but I read a website yesterday that was saying the 8 most laughable things about the costume, and people were saying his hair was stupid, his tattoos are stupid, his trident looks like he bought it in a party supply shop. It's like, get over it, he looks badass. It's Khal Drogo as Aquaman. What more do you want?
He looks more badass than Aquaman ever has.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to go with... I was really annoyed by the Catwoman film. it annoyed me with Halle Berry. It was absolutely dreadful.
As it should.
Yeah. I'd like to see them do something good with that character and actually give her another film, and I'd have Scarlett Johansson in the suit.
That's it. You just want to see her in a leather cat suit. Which is fair enough.
I liked her in Lucy. I thought she was quite good, and I thought, well, if she's that acrobatic and put her in some black PVC, I'd love that.
You bloody would love that, wouldn't you?
I'd bloody love that. And I'd also like the Star Wars prequels to be remade with people that can act. That'd be cool.
And a good script.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Keep your questions coming through. Obviously, go on facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast. You can go on Twitter, which is at STTEpodcast. You can email us, skiptotheend@icloud.com. Or you could write it on a piece of paper. You could take a photo of it. And you can tag us on Instagram, which is skiptotheendpodcast. That would be stupid. But while you're there, have a look at our cool pictures. Loads of cosplayers on there. Loads of artwork from all the great episodes we do. Well, let's give him a shout-out. Thanks to our mate Paul.
Yeah.
He puts in a lot of hard work. Every week we've got a different piece of artwork.
He does. Cracking job, Paul.
He's a legend. If you're listening, which I hope you are, thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks.
Cheers, Paul. See you there.
So that brings us to the end of yet another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. Thank you for listening. Next time round, on our episode coming out in 2 weeks, we're going to be reviewing Chappie, the new film from Neil Blomkamp. Mark, what's our big topic going
to
be?
It's a hell of a good topic. We're going back to the old days of doing top five sci-fi movies. Good luck with that.
Yep, should be a fun one. And Adam, tell the people what we're going to rewatch.
We're going to be watching The Matrix Revolutions.
Yeah, it's a film that you bloody love, isn't it?
I bloody love The Matrix Revolutions. Mm,
and that was sarcasm. He hates it, as do we all, so that'll be fun. We're also going to have quite a few prizes to give away. We'll be taking listener questions as usual, so tune in then.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Laters, babes.